Stephen, ignoring Eleanor, loosened his tie and was now sipping on a glass of wine that he'd brought in from the kitchen with the bottle it came from. This had been a momentous and alcohol-rich day. Tonight he was not going back to work when his children had been put to bed. Tonight there was no reason to go back to work. A politician, inhabitant of a distant galaxy, Holly's was the world of the here and now. Politics just wasn't in the frame. Life was elsewhere, anywhere really, everywhere. She was young. "Anyway," she said, "just thought I'd say hello. Really great to see you again. All of that. Anything you need. I'm here 10 till 8 every day." She flashed me the corporate rictus. "Maybe you'd like to join a class." "Maybe," I nodded amiably. "I'll think about it." The agent arrived not long afterwards. He tried to stand as she approached the table, but fell back down again quickly. Elizabeth did not seem to notice. She looked as though she'd lost weight since he had last seen her. The well-cut black suit, the scarlet lipstick, and the steel-grey bob did not lend her dash today, but looked like a badly chosen disguise. Her face was yellowish and seemed to sag. "How are you?" he asked. "How do you think I am?" she croaked rudely. "What?" she snapped at a hovering waiter. "Oh, water. Still." He went into the adjoining room. It was a bedroom with one large window, two beds pushed next to each other, and on the wall an autumn landscape with birches and a setting sun. When he came back, he found an open bottle of wine and two glasses on the table. "How about a little something to keep your strength up during the big job ahead?" She was awarded a croix de guerre. Never told anyone at home about it. Put it away in a drawer when she came home. It meant nothing when you thought about what those poor boys had gone through. She had been engaged twice during the war, both men dying within days of proposing to her, and long before Izzy herself had got around to writing a letter home with her happy news. She had been with one of them, the second one, when he died. By chance she had found him in a field hospital that her ambulance was delivering the wounded to. She hadn't recognized him at first. He had been so mangled by artillery fire. The matron, short of nurses and orderlies, encouraged her to stay with him. "There, there," Izzy soothed, keeping watch at his deathbed by the oily yellow light of a tilly lamp. He called out for his mother at the end. They all did. Izzy couldn't imagine calling for Adelaide on her deathbed. An old man is sitting outside in the shade of a tarpaulin, watching with keen eyes as Ivan approaches.
"You'd better get in out of the sun, young fella," he says by way of greeting, "before you fry your fucking brains."
Ivan joins the man under the tarp. The air is no cooler, but the shade is like a benediction. The old fellow is wearing shorts and sandals, his torso naked. He's scrawny, no fat, as if the heat has melted it off him, leaving only muscles, bone and sinew, and a small beer belly. Even it looks hard, like a fossilized football. The Poles packed up the transit camp in Almari and were loaded onto ships to be sailed around the African coast to Tobruk to relieve the Aussies, who were heading back to New Guinea to fight the Japanese. Tolik Klins lay on the hot metal deck of the British minesweeper, the HMS Latona, watching the bombs drop and the anti-aircraft guns belching puffs of smoke. Ed clambers in beside her, I into the front passenger seat. Ed is sitting sideways with his long legs. Prue touches the central locking, drives us as far as the exit, and feeds her parking ticket into the machine. The boom shudders upwards. The wing mirrors are so far clear. No car, no motorbike. The Comte seemed to appreciate his fanciful descriptions. Then, one day, on the way home after one such session, Giotto Sr. told his son to stop playing the ninny. Couldn't he see that the Comte was making sport of his ignorance? But the Comte didn't ask. Instead, he said, 5 years ago, you'd have turned up unwashed to show how hard at work you had been.
I hope not, Sebran said.
Oh, yes, you would have, the Comte went on. I have lived much longer than I anticipated. Every night I climb into bed thinking I've got away with another day. God has overlooked me.
But she'd followed the direction of his scrutiny. Oh, I say. She watched Taverner walk the gravelled path to the chapel door. A little mature for you, dear? She's... He hesitated, but what the hell, his mother was a service child. First desk, that's why she's here. Well, she's nicely turned out, I'll give her that, but you ought to set your sights on someone your own age. I'm not. Or your own wage bracket. That's Chanel she's wearing, she eyed her son critically. They walked and they walked till they came to a little house all by itself in the darkest part of the forest. All around the house there was a knobby white fence. The gate clattered as they pushed at it. Just then the door of the house opened, and an old woman stood in the doorway. But what a strange old woman she was, with her nose turned down and her chin turned up and just the points of her teeth showing. Come in, my children, she called, and she beckoned with her bony finger.